Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective, and more affordable than you might think. Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Listening and wondering, you know, what that show is. We're a live call-in radio program. The telephone number is 603-283-6160. I don't have the article in front of me for show prep, but at some point in 2020, there was a professional football player, I believe an offensive lineman. His name is Russell Okung, O-K-U-N-G. He somehow got the orange pill. He got the Bitcoin vibe.
Based.
And so he was up for a free agent contract, you know, the one where they get paid millions of dollars. His contract was something like $13 million guaranteed, and he took half of it in Bitcoin.
Bet he's sitting pretty now.
I think I remember that. It was the guy who got in trouble for Deflategate.
Yes. So he was with, like, the Seahawks and, like, the Jacksonville Jaguars and a couple different...
I thought it was the Patriots.
The Broncos, a couple different NFL teams. He's sort of, you know, hoard around, if you will, amongst the NFL teams. But I read an article today that, like, if you just take half of that $6.5 million in 2020 and figure out what it was worth now, like, it's a lot.
Yeah. I hope he didn't have lettuce hands.
It's like way more than his entire best
net worth,
free agent
probably.
Contract.
Yeah.
Like if he just kept it and sat on it, right?
Yeah.
Now no one knows, and he's not coming forward and going like, yeah, I have this much left, or yeah. I spent this more, whatever.
Come after me, U.S. government.
Right. Yeah, he's not asking for any, but like if you just do the math, you're like, man, that guy did himself a solid.
Mm-hmm.
If he kept it.
Well, anyone who gets Bitcoin basically at any point is doing themselves a solid.
Yeah, that's
if
true.
They we keep
should,
it.
We should all be like Michael Saylor and always be buying the top.
Yeah,
You're not wrong.
Yeah. I've got a friend of mine, a good friend of mine. He's a former roadie, used to, you know, help us load gear in and out and, you know, man the merch table and, you know, all that fun stuff. And we'd give him our free drink tickets, you know, and get him into the shows for free, that kind of thing. And I have been trying to enrich this guy's life, like, for a decade or something, right? And every time I do, like, either he gets into it and then gets out, and, like, it turns out I finally called him out. I'm like, dude, you are just the most impatient FCC-er that I've, you know, been friends with. He's like, yeah, you got me on that one. I am pretty impatient when it comes to money and stuff like that, which is surprising because he collects like comic books and action figures and trades and, you know, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect for somebody of that demeanor,
right.
But because it's an intangible, he can't hold it. He can't see it. He can't put it on his shelf and display it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He can't show it off to his friends.
Well, I mean, and collectibles are a lot less liquid. Like, it's a lot harder to turn a collectible into money than it is to turn Bitcoin into fiat.
This guy does it. He routinely will buy something, sit on it a couple of years, turn around and sell it for, you know, profit.
Right.
Like, oh, well, I paid $20 for this thing. Somebody's offered me $100. Yeah, sure. Here, have it.
Yeah.
Right? Even though you can't go out and buy one for $20 again.
Right.
Now it's just, he always just considers, oh, what did I pay for it? What are they offering me? I can't do any better than that, so I'll take that, right? Sometimes he'll be like, well, only if you also buy this other thing, right? Mm-hmm. He'll package it up with something else. But I just thought, like, this is the type of person, kind of like a silver bug, you know, or a gold bug, like these types of people who collect coins, and, you know, they just sort of sit on them for a while, and then every now and again, they're like, yeah, I guess I'll try and sell some of these.
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally waste my time on people who are only focused and care about cryptocurrency because number go up. Basically, whenever I talk to people about it, I'm always trying to convince them from like a moral perspective,
yes,
and from like a technological perspective. And then when they ask me about, oh, okay, how does Lightning work? How do I actually use crypto in my day-to-day life? They have a sincere and honest desire to get into the technology.
Yeah, they're coming at it from the right place.
Right, exactly. So then you're a lot, they're a lot more likely to actually keep and use this currency for the long term rather than just treat it like a way to get more dirty war fiat money.
Right.
Well, sure, but that takes time, right? So if you can get somebody to like buy in to something, some cryptocurrency, right, for whatever reasons they might have, whether it's I want to invest for my kid's future, mm-hmm. or I want to, you know, enrich my wealth base, or I find this a morally superior technology,
right,
to regular currencies or state-based currencies, that kind of a thing. Like, the idea, at least for me with this guy, was let's get him into something,
yeah,
and then let me duplicate that so that he and I can like sort of go through this journey together.
Yeah.
Right. And then I can explain the things as time goes on.
Yeah.
But like, no, it's always like, oh yeah, dude, I totally sold that already.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm spoiled because we're in New Hampshire, but I feel like there's enough people that I know that are on the morality train,
yeah,
that it's like I just need to convince them that Bitcoin and crypto are the morally superior technologies, and then that's enough.
Like, I'll bump into people who are like, screw your morals, pal. It's like, okay, what about ethics?
Yeah.
And how about principles? Yeah. Do you subscribe to either of those?
Or hell, what about your own damn self-interest? Like, why would you keep something that you know is going to go down in value while you have something that can actually retain its value over time?
Yeah, we are at a point.
Because I'm really, really focused on the short term.
Right.
Yeah, we are at a point where we should introduce ourselves.
Oh.
In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass.
Zeffin.
And Pickless Mountaineer.
Segue. We are at a point where the USD, right, this is the Federal Reserve currency, what everybody refers to as dollars, right, the greenbacks in your wallet. We're at a point where holding on to those is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because you aren't.
Did we just arrive at this point?
No, but like, but
well, no. I think it's really important to notice that, like, and I would absolutely say it's when the ETFs got approved, like that was the line, and not when the fake tweet came out, but when the real tweet came out. There was always the advice: never put more into Bitcoin than you can afford to lose.
Right.
That does not apply. We are past the, we are beyond the pale of just put what you can afford to lose.
Yeah, to me, the turning point in the philosophy of like how much do you put into it, right? Like, it used to be like, oh, I'll do a 10% dollar cost average. Every time I get a paycheck, I'll, you know, 10% of whatever, you know, my post-tax payday is, right? I'll just put that right away into some cryptocurrency somewhere. For me, the turning point was, of course, all of the money they printed during the supposed COVID outbreak.
So I get that.
Like, oh my God, they dumped trillions and trillions of dollars into the economy. They shut everybody down. They outlawed art. You couldn't have music. You couldn't have a theater. You couldn't have a play. You couldn't have your kid do a recital. None of that, right? They closed everything down, and then they flooded their own market with more money, devaluing everything that everybody had saved under their mattress, in their closet, in their bank account, whatever it is, to a point where it's ridiculous for you to think you're ever going to save dollars. If I have $5,000 in the bank today, next week it's worth less than it is today.
Yeah. Well, and the right way, I think, to think about this one, and shout out to Guy Swan on putting it this way. So the average person will earn $2 million in their entire life.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems low.
It doesn't seem low. A little low, but it's about $2 million. Sure. So when they printed $6 trillion, they wiped out the life's effort of 300 million people.
So no, they made everyone richer. They printed more money, so now everyone has more money.
And what's the current population of the U.S.?
Well, 330 million.
Thereabouts.
So yeah, they wiped out the entire current generation's choices. Yeah.
And so the thing is that you're actually both right. The ETFs had a big part of it, and also the inflation had a big part of it. I think another thing that has a really big part of it, which will have a huge paradigm shift, is right now people are focused way too much on how much Bitcoin's value is in dollars. So everybody's like, oh, Bitcoin is $70,000 right now or whatever. All you have to do to see the power of Bitcoin is flip it. So see how USD is priced in the amount of Bitcoin.
Right.
And if you look at the past 6 months, the dollar has actually lost around 66% of its value in relation to Bitcoin. It's around that amount.
That's the best way to look at it, because it's the most realistic.
Right.
Yeah. Or look at things like housing as priced in Bitcoin.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's another fun one to look at.
Especially if you can compare that to housing as priced in the dollar, because, mm-hmm. man, it is impossible to afford a house with dollars.
And recently, there have actually been a couple of countries like Turkey and Argentina in which their dollar has literally went to zero, mm-hmm. in respect to Bitcoin price.
Yeah.
Like, so their currency is worthless compared to Bitcoin, literally.
I remember seeing a post on the social media somewhere that said, "Here is one ounce gold coin."
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the creation of the Federal Reserve, you could use this 1 ounce gold coin to buy yourself a really nice suit,
mm-hmm.
a nice 3-piece button up. You know, maybe mm-hmm. take it to the tailor, have it fitted, whatever, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And like then, this is a couple of years ago, so, you know, I don't know, 2022 or something, 21. It was like, this same 1 ounce gold coin can still buy you a nice suit. You go to like, you know, a men's warehouse, mm-hmm. or, you know, some, you know, whatever, your local place that provides suits or whatever. Get yourself something nice for that same 1 gold coin. Mm-hmm. I saw one recently that it was like, I don't even know what the weight of it was, but it was like 1 bar of gold. And it was like, you know, in 17 something, this could buy you a really nice house. And then fast forward, like in 2024, this can still buy you, mm-hmm. a house.
Yeah.
Right? You know, maybe as nice or whatever.
And to bring it all home, an ounce of gold used to be $20.
Yeah. What is it now?
Well,
oh, it's $2,200.
And so there's two ways you can view what you're describing, which is that, like, one, humans have a sort of subjective value of things that is kind of tied with reality over time. So, of course, one suit will always cost the same amount. But another way to look at this is that it's been like 100 years. So the technology and the efficiency to make these things, houses, suits, should have all improved.
Right.
So the fact that these things aren't cheaper just shows you that they've stolen so much that we've basically stagnated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we literally can't begin to calculate how much they've stolen from us because we don't know what prices would have gone down if they hadn't printed so many dollars that their attempt, what they were trying to do, was make sure that prices only went up 2%.
Mm-hmm.
They were making sure that prices went up.
No, that's what they told everybody they were doing.
Well,
it's not what they did.
The official story is to attempt to make it go up by 2%.
Yeah.
Which is still destructive and evil.
Right. So that means, like, on the face of it, like, even if we had a way less evil of a government where they were trying to keep, quote unquote, even prices, like, not go up, not go down. Like, even then, you are stealing from us every human innovation,
mm-hmm.
every technological advance stolen by the government, and then 2% on top of that.
Mm-hmm. I would like to just talk about, you mentioned the phrase, a less evil government. I don't think that's possible. The only way it's possible is if you're starting over and you've like absconded with whatever previous version of government you had, and now you're like trying to start over. You might get mm-hmm. a less evil government at the beginning, but the basis of government is evil.
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually disagree. I think that if the government is operating off of a sound money system, there's an inherent limit to how evil they can be. So they are inherently less evil than a government that is not operating off of a sound money system, just due to the amount of evil that they can actually perpetrate.
Is there a government on planet Earth operating under a sound money system?
Yes, El Salvador.
Well, not anymore.
Outside of El Salvador.
El Salvador is still operating on America's fiat, though.
It is. It's officially the dollar, even though they bought a bunch of BTC.
But you could actually use it in your day-to-day life, and it's legal tender, so.
What about Argentina? Yeah. Or did they adopt?
Argentina is currently trying to move to the dollar.
To the dollar. Okay. Yeah.
So they are attempting to have a less evil system.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're not the ones printing it.
Right. That's what I was going to say is at least a system that they can't control, which does make it kind of inherently sound to a certain extent.
It makes it less evil because at that point, you as the government actively want your people to be more productive.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are gaining all of your power not from printing money, but from gathering their taxes.
Right.
So it's in your best interest all that right. they earn more so mm-hmm. that you can gather more.
So then it may be possible to reduce the quantity of evil in a government, but I don't believe you can have a government that is not evil.
Correct.
I think we're all in agreement there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's less bad. But not good.
Right. Yeah. It's like minimum security versus maximum security. You're still in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just want to like make it clear because I know that there are going to be people out there that listen to this and they're going to be like, these utopianists, they think that they can get rid of government and like there will just be no evil. And clearly that's not what we're saying. We're just speaking a little nuanced here. But like, at the end of the day, there are no solutions. There are only trade-offs, right? We just all happen to know that the government has the most amount of trade-offs and that there are better solutions than having a monopoly on violence to deal with our problems.
Well, yeah, it really just comes down to the monopoly thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very simple, and almost everyone gets that monopolies are bad,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
that monopolies will always, always lead to poor service at high prices. Everyone kind of gets that. What they don't realize is that's all the government is, all it ever can be, is a monopoly on violence.
Right.
And whatever it decides is also part of its job, now it has a monopoly on that. So, like right now, it has a monopoly on welfare.
Yeah.
It has a monopoly on housing.
Yep.
Has a monopoly on money.
Money, yep. Yep.
Which is the absolute worst thing to have a monopoly on.
Yes, it is.
Most important, too, for them.
Yeah.
And in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And most people realize that you can't allow the government to control things like food, but they don't know why.
Well, and they also have a monopoly on security services.
Right.
With the exception of, like, you know, if you own a business or something, you can still hire like private security
mm-hmm.
to like, you know, patrol your, you know, whatever land your business is on or whatever, that kind of thing. But that private security does not replace or supersede the police force.
Right.
They are only below that.
And they will never have qualified immunity.
Right.
And even in areas where they don't have a monopoly over things, the buck still stops with them. Like, because at the end of the day, all corporations have to ask permission from the government to operate.
Right.
And the government can tell them to stop. And there can be a sort of regulatory capture in which the government is still sort of in control without even having to be in control, which can be worse because it makes the government more efficient, and that's not really a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's why we're a fascist system and not a communist system.
Right.
Because they do have some of the advantages of having a market, but they control everything.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's go to your calls and thoughts. I believe this is Tim in Florida. Tim, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello, Captain Pequis. Did not catch the third guy's name.
Zephin,
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Pequis, or all three of you actually, but particularly Pequis, you may realize why in the future. Have you heard of Whitney Webb?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does the Unlimited Hangout podcast.
Awesome. Okay, so she actually talks about Javier Milei a little bit, and she made some comments about him. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but she said basically that his plan to dollarize the peso means that he needs dollars. Argentina needs dollars, and they don't have dollars. So where are they going to get the dollars?
For goods and services.
I actually have an answer to this one.
Oh?
Basically, Argentina is in a process of where they're basically trying to incentivize becoming the new Switzerland. So you can basically bring pallets of cash and deposit them into Argentinian banks, no questions asked. And yeah, they offer good interest rates and stuff. So they're basically trying to create like the private banking system that Switzerland had the monopoly of for hundreds of years. So that's basically their plan to do it, is to incentivize foreign depositors.
Yeah, and one thing that you have to remember is that anyone who has the global reserve currency will always be sending more money away from their country than bringing money into their country. So there's always going to be a trade deficit with anyone who runs the global reserve currency, which is why China explicitly avoids the possibility of ever being the world's reserve currency, because they don't want to destroy their manufacturing base.
Yeah, they'd be screwed.
Right.
Tim?
Well, according to Whitney Webb, and I haven't completely cracked into her, I don't know if it's a theory or something, you know, that's completely based on fact, but according to her, you need investors, and those investors are J.P. Morgan and Deutsche Bank, and the head, I wish I had the notes in front of me.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah, no, it's not perfect, but it is absolutely the best thing for Argentina now. Because, mm-hmm. like, yeah, don't get me wrong. If we're talking magic wand, big red button here, I would absolutely prefer that their system be based on, like, gold or Bitcoin or something like that.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that they've been under a kind of socialist reign for a very long time, and a lot of power is still in that ideological camp. So if you moved to completely sound money, you would never get anything passed.
And
they would immediately overthrow it.
There are some people actually inching themselves in that direction. We learned that at Liberty Forum today. There was this one talk where there are a lot of devs that are developing technology that create for simple integration with the Lightning Network, similar to what's happening in El Salvador. So there is good work happening there, but I agree. I think it would be a shock to the system if it were like an overnight type thing.
And yeah, this is part of the dirty business of politics that, yeah, it's actually in his favor to have such nightmarish organizations as J.P. Morgan on your side.
Tim?
Well, I would invite anyone to check out Whitney Webb's work.
Definitely.
Wish I had the links in front of me and the exact titles. But where I found out about her was on The Last American Vagabond. And I know that even Glenn Beck, have lost complete respect for Glenn Beck over the last 6 months. But even Glenn Beck even interviewed her once. But The Last American Vagabond, I used to listen to 20 different shows, and I would have to catch up with all of them. I'm down to two. Free Talk Live. Okay. And
well, we're honored.
American Vagabond.
Nice. And, yeah, it's a great show. And Unlimited Hangout is the podcast that I know that I'm familiar with of hers. And yeah, just get on the internet and find Whitney Webb, because she seems to be doing some really good journalistic work.
Is that with an H? Whitney?
Yes.
Whitney?
With a
B.
Yep.
All right. Well, hey, Tim, thank you so much for the call, man. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening, too. 603-283-6160 is the number if you'd like to join us tonight. Whether you're a Whitney Webb fan or not, give us a call. Your opinions are welcome. It's Free Talk Live.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
USA News Update. The judge overseeing former President Trump's hush money trial in New York is agreeing to delay it. The trial was scheduled to start on March 25th. It will now be pushed back until the middle of April. Prosecutor Nathan Wade is resigning from Donald Trump election interference case in Georgia. In a written statement, Wade says he's doing it in the interest of democracy and to move the case forward as quickly as possible. A Georgia judge ruled that Fulton County DA Fawnie Willis can remain on former President Trump's election interference case if Wade was removed. The governor of Ohio says people in his state came together in the aftermath of some devastating storms.
Asked the law enforcement, you know, how in the world did you check all the places? And they got it done. Neighbors who are watching out for neighbors.
Dave Collins, USA News.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
For those of you who are for those of you who are not watching our live video stream of this show over at watch.freetalklive.com, Zephin is wearing a black t-shirt with a large red, we'll call it a rectangle, with white lettering that says Satoshi.
And it's to give a better visualization to maybe Gen Z or millennial people, if anyone's seen the Supreme logo on a shirt, that's what this is inspired by. And you'll never guess where I actually got it. This is just another New Hampshire pill for anyone listening.
Liberty Forum?
I got it at a thrift store in New Hampshire. It's like that. That's just the kind of place this is.
You won't find that at thrift stores anywhere else.
You know what else I got with it? There was a shirt that said American Infidel, and it had an AR-15 on it. And then on the back, it said Infidel in Arabic.
Oh, nice.
And so, like, I don't know. I feel like New Hampshire is just the best place on earth. So
we mentioned Liberty Forum. If anybody's listening live, And you're anywhere near New Hampshire Liberty Forum is going on in what city?
Nashua this time. It's usually in Manchester, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, so we have to increase the venue size.
Now, you were there earlier today. Mm-hmm. Were you there yesterday?
Yeah, I was. Peakless and I were just here today.
How populous would you say it was? Is it one of the more successful ones?
I think so. Yeah definitely. A lot of awesome people there, like usual. A lot of people that really care about liberty and freedom, and not even just from New Hampshire. There's people that come from all over the country to participate in it. It's almost like a pork fest appetizer is how I like to view it.
Yeah.
Sort of like gets your taste buds renormalized with getting into like big groups with liberty people. Because in New Hampshire, we're always around liberty people. Like you just drive around on the highway, you see pork magnets, stuff like that. But like there's only a couple of times a year where we all get together and have a blast, and Liberty Forum is one of those times.
Yeah. And then Porkfest is the other.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, Liberty Forum, it's a snack, whereas Porkfest is the meal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I mean, we're here doing this, so obviously I'm not there for that reason. But I will be at Forkfest and Porkfest, of course. What I really enjoy about Liberty Forum, having never been to one, is that it exists.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I enjoy. And I also, like, people will ping me all the time. Hey, are you going to, like, no, I'm doing the show so that other people can go. Like, Bonnie's out there. I believe Mark Edge is making an appearance out there.
Oh, yeah, he's there.
You know, so, like, there are some Free Talk Live people.
Riley's there.
Gardner Goldsmith, who does our Friday show. It's sort of a version of his show that he does weekly, but he does a specially curated show for Friday nights where there's no cussing and, you know, things like that to be broadcast on the Free Talk Live network. So he's there as well.
Yeah. I don't know if Chris is still on, Penguin Chris, but like he was there.
He is a sometimes guest on Free Talk Live. I think he stopped doing his own show for some period of time. I don't know what that is. But, certainly you will find an assortment of, you know, hosts, co-hosts, former hosts and co-hosts of Free Talk Live at Liberty Forum for certain. So if you're out there, say hello, stop in.
And use some peace money while you're there, because basically everyone takes it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's actually somebody that I got onboarded onto crypto who lives in the Keene area and was somehow a crypto virgin, even though he's lived out here, like, for a while.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. And he wasn't against it or anything. He just hadn't had the opportunity, which is weird.
I'm not really surprised. Like, there's been a lot of activism in Keene regarding cryptocurrency and also, like, the police state and that kind of thing. But it's usually demonstrative activism and not, like, educational activism, right? There's an occasional event at, like, the Bitcoin Embassy. That's an educational event, that kind of thing, in the Keene area. But, like, most of the activism has traditionally been sort of subversive. Like, oh, let's cop block, or let's go, you know, video some cops and, you know, make sure that whoever they're pulling over isn't, you know, having their rights violated, stuff like that. Or, hey, let's gather every Sunday at this place, and because they take cryptocurrency and gold and that kind of a thing.
Well, that's what's more impressive to me is, like, in terms of the Keene activism, is the rapid onboarding of vendors in respect to taking crypto and stuff like that. Mm. And that's what this guy was. Like, he was a vendor. So I was shocked, to say the least.
Were you shocked?
I was shocked. One might say I was electrified by the lightning.
All right. Whiplash segue. I don't really have a, you know, creative way to, you know, move from that into this first story anyway that I brought in.
I mean, I know we're in New Hampshire, but hopefully everyone was wearing their seatbelts.
It's not required.
I wasn't.
Not required, but, oh man. About a year ago, I flew to Seattle for a couple of reasons. One, to have a drummer friend of mine do some drum tracks for me on the EP and that kind of a thing, but also to play what used to be an annual poker game that I would host with a bunch of, like, you know, my old bandmates and, you know, friends and all that kind of stuff. So usually around the St. Paddy's Day is when we would have this thing, and it was called the Irish Spring Invitational. Right. And so because we hadn't done it in a couple of years, last year it was called the Irish Spring Invitational Revival. So all that to say,
not to be confused with the Creedence Clearwater revival.
Different revival altogether, yes.
The only revival I know otherwise.
All that to say, this came to my attention via some people in the Seattle area. This is an article from NPR. NPR is not known for their pro-freedom stance.
No.
But I found this interesting because it involves Boeing, the largest manufacturer of aircraft, I think, still.
Also a huge contractor for the war machine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I didn't realize that when I first invested in them. It's the only stock I've ever sold at a loss.
Did you do that for principled reasons?
I did it for principled reasons. Okay. I never sell anything at a loss.
Okay.
And when it's cryptocurrency, I just never sell in general.
Like, once upon a time, I threw... it was $1,000 at, let's call it a retirement home, right? A place for, you know, because boomers, right? Or, you know, they're getting older. They need places to go.
Right.
Right. Their kids, you know, we don't want to house them. Let's stick them in a home or whatever, right? So I threw some money at one of these things, you know, under the guise of, I'm just going to forget about it and wait for it to go up because eventually this thing will get populated or whatever. But I ran into a time in my life where I needed the money, so I sold at a loss.
Yeah.
Right, and I got out. But, like, that was the reason. I didn't get out because of principled reason. Right. I got out because I'm like, I kind of need that cash.
Even though screw those old people.
I think I got, like, $750 out of it, out of my 1,000. So I took a loss, but, whatever. But, like, that's the only time I've invested in actual stocks of something. Right, outside of, like... I've had 401ks where, like, they invest in stocks on your behalf, and, like, if you put in $10, your employer matches $10 or whatever it is, right? You know? So, like, those are kind of, but, like, I've never actively participated in stocks except that one time.
Well, I think I'm living proof that if you're a normal person, war does not pay.
Yeah.
So, this from NPR, Boeing whistleblower John Barnett. If you're not familiar with this story, John Barnett... raised the alarm over plane quality. He's a bit of a whistleblower.
Oh, yeah, I heard of this.
Yeah, he's found dead.
Yep.
Right now.
Yeah, right before his deposition, right?
Police, this has just got fishy written. Police in Charleston, South Carolina are investigating the death of John Barnett, a former Boeing quality control manager who became a whistleblower when he went public with his concerns about serious safety issues in the company's commercial airplanes. I don't know if you guys know about this, but right now Boeing's kind of under fire for, like, missing bolts in, like, the door on the side of their airplanes and, you know, all these weird, like...
Because if you're high enough in the military-industrial complex, the laws simply do not apply to you.
Well, it's also the case that if diversity becomes your highest value, you tend to sacrifice quality over that.
Barnett's body was found in a vehicle in a Holiday Inn parking lot in Charleston on Saturday. That's a week ago from today, police said. One day earlier, he testified at a deposition related to the string of problems he identified at Boeing's plant where he once helped inspect the 787 Dreamliner aircraft before delivery to customers. So, yeah, he gave a deposition, and then the next day, he's found dead in a car at a Holiday Inn.
Wow.
Barnett was in the middle of giving deposition testimony in his whistleblower retaliation case against Boeing when he died. So it wasn't done. It was just the beginning of his deposition, the first day of it. He finished with the first day, and then the next day he was
in my
dead.
Day, we had standards on our assassinations. It was always the day before deposition. This young generation.
I think that this shows that if anyone wants to be a whistleblower in the future, we have the technology and we have the established court norms to just do these things on Zoom.
Yeah.
And you could be in Russia. You could be in Venezuela. Like, you could be anywhere in the world.
Tech exists.
Yeah. You could be anywhere in the world. You could be safe.
I worked for a company. One of the guys on my team was in El Salvador with, like, a team of his own, and he would jump on calls with us in Seattle, you know, at the appropriate time, the Seattle time, whatever the time zone difference is there or whatever. And so, not a big deal. Yeah, you're right. The tech exists.
Right.
I've used it.
Your life is important, especially as a whistleblower. I mean, your life has inherent value on its own, but, I mean, we want you alive as a whistleblower.
Yeah. if you're going to break Omerta, if you're going to go against the mafia that is dominant across the globe especially, then you need to get that on file. You need to release that publicly on the internet so that no one can scrub it.
And in its entirety.
In its entirety.
Yeah, don't do a piecemeal.
Yeah, none of this piecemeal nonsense. You need that information to be out there completely, because at that point, there's really not a point in killing you.
Yeah, the deposition should really just be the sugar on top.
Right.
Yeah.
He was in very good spirits and really looking forward to putting this phase of his life behind him and moving on. The South Carolina-based attorneys, these are attorneys for Barnett.
Well, he did move on.
Said in a joint statement, "We didn't see any indication he would take his own life. No one can believe it."
Nor should they.
Police officers were sent to the hotel to conduct a welfare check after people were unable to contact Barnett, who had traveled to Charleston to testify in his lawsuit against Boeing. They say his lawsuit, so I have to think this is a suit he brought specifically against Boeing. This wasn't like a class action. This wasn't like him and a bunch of other employees. This specifically.
I wonder what harm he'd allege. It's interesting. I want to look into that more.
Upon their arrival, officers discovered a male inside of a vehicle suffering from a gunshot wound to the head. Police said in a statement to NPR, he was pronounced deceased at the scene. The office of Charleston County Coroner Bobby Joe O'Neill said that Barnett, who had been living in his home state of Louisiana after retiring from Boeing, died, quote, from what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound, unquote. What appears to be. Charleston police said detectives are actively investigating the case and are awaiting a formal cause of death as they try to determine the circumstances surrounding Barnett's death. Barnett, who spent decades working for Boeing at its plants in Everett, Washington, and North Charleston, South Carolina, had repeatedly alleged that Boeing's manufacturing process and practices had declined, and that rather than improve them, he added, managers had pressured workers to not document potential defects and problems. "We are saddened by Mr. Barnett's passing, and our thoughts are with his family and friends," Boeing said in a statement to NPR. Barnett, age 62, made international headlines in April of 2019 when he and other former Boeing employees spoke to the New York Times about what he called shoddy manufacturing problems at Boeing. Barnett accused the company of adopting a culture that prioritized raw numbers and profits over quality, and by extension, passenger safety. "As a quality manager at Boeing, you're the last line of defense before a defect makes it out to the flying public," Barnett told the newspaper. "And I haven't seen a plane out of Charleston yet that I'd put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy." That's pretty damning.
That is damning.
Like, from the guy that you've hired to be sort of like the last line of QA and to double inspect all your processes for safety and all that kind
of
stuff.
Makes me wonder why there aren't more planes that crash, quite honestly.
Honestly, well, I mean, so you've got multiple God things going love against us, man. You, right? Right? I mean, like, okay, so number one, I mean, I don't tend to think first, and I ought to, that Boeing is, the people that make bombs. They are, but I don't immediately think of that. But, okay, so number one, you've got the protection of being in the military-industrial complex and a major player in the military-industrial complex.
Arguably the biggest one.
Yeah. Number two, you've got a practical monopoly on your field because it is almost impossible to break into the creation of aviation technology. It is just shy of impossible to do that in this country.
Yeah.
And number three, you've just got the same incentive as every other company. When you are printing money, it is this quarter that matters, and no other quarter ever matters.
Yeah, that's the problem with the government corporations, right? People are like, corporations suck, right? You hear a bunch of that on the left coast all the time. Corporations are okay, but like, they're also a creation of government.
Yeah.
Right?
Before government got into this business of wrangling businesses. Like, you had family companies, right? You had, like, Peekless and Sons or, Zeffin's Family, blah, 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 whatever it is that you had. And, like, even banks, for that matter, were like very super conservative because they knew
and
that
community
they had to,
driven.
Yeah, they knew they had to maintain the trust of the community in order to remain in business. So banks would never, ever like loan out more than 10% of what they could finance, right? You know what I mean? This whole bit of like this zero reserve banking or fractional reserve banking like wasn't even a thought for them. They were like, no, I would be a dumb businessman to do that. But then all of a sudden, here comes government going, hey, if you fill out the right pieces of paperwork and pay the right licensing fees, well, we'll give you government protection from these lawsuits. And so everybody goes, yeah. But what it does is it necessarily means that these companies must be worried, as you said, Peekless, about the next quarter's profit or the next year's profit, right? They can't take a step back and go, hey, let's put profit aside for a minute and focus on safety. Like, they can't do that.
Well, and let's look at what a corporation is, right? You have a literally psychopathically motivated legal fiction. That's what this is. If they find out that the CEO is operating for some purpose other than to make money at any cost, then they will lose their position. They will likely be sued. They might go to jail if they put the safety of their customers above getting dollars.
Right. Also, keep in mind why they incorporate in the first place, right? It's to offset liability.
Right.
So clearly, you're going to act in the most haphazardly unsafe fashion possible if it gives you more of a profit, because if you're running the company, they can't go after your money. So, like, the more money you can shovel into your own pocket is all the better. And something else that's important to note is that the companies that tend to, or the corporations that tend to be the most successful are the ones that are the best at greasing the palms of government.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's a fact. It's like 100-to-1 returns on lobbying politicians.
Yeah, I just want to say something about the article before you conspiracy theorists get your grubby little hands all over it. So clearly, it's very, very common for people that are in the process of doing depositions to kill themselves, all right? I know this. I'm in the legal field. Every time what we try to call someone up for a deposition, we do the first day, and then the next day, poof, dead. Just happens like every other day.
You're being sarcastic.
Of course. Okay, right. This like never happens. Like, I mean, nobody kills themselves in the middle of the most important deposition of their lives.
Yeah, nobody starts.
Nobody does that.
Nobody starts an extremely risky deposition and then goes, you know, what's more important to me than finishing this is just not living anymore. No one does that.
Yeah. And this is why, like, when I read this, I'm like, something fishy.
Yeah.
Like, this smells like something. Like, we see television and movies like mafia type stuff. We're like, oh, well, if we just take them out of the picture, they can't testify, right? Mm-hmm. Well, like, if that was the case here, they like missed it by a day.
Right.
I'm just angry that they think that we're this FCC and stupid.
Well, who knows what he didn't finish in his testimony?
That's true.
Maybe they're like, I don't think he actually will do this. I'm pretty sure he's way too scared to. He's deposing. Yeah,
or he started to say something, and they're like, we'll have to continue this tomorrow.
Okay, well, we gotta take him out before he covers this, this, and this, because he already covered this.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go a little bit deeper on my conspiracy rabbit hole.
Good thing I already dressed your grubby little hands beforehand. Indeed.
So I think that a lot of the articles coming out about these sort of things are slowly but surely and subtly encouraging people to avoid air travel. I think that they are slowly but surely psychologically manipulating the population to avoid traveling.
Mm.
Because I got to tell you, after this article, I myself was thinking, geez, you know, I have no reason to trust Boeing at all.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should really avoid taking any unnecessary flights.
And you can tell that all of these airline companies are prioritizing the diversity of the applicants over the quality of their ability to actually be pilots. And that was kind of the thing that was already concerning for a lot of people. But I think a lot of people were like, at least the planes are well built. And now that isn't the case
anymore.
Or are they?
So apparently there was an article in the New York Times that he spoke about. And by the time that article appeared, Barnett had already filed a whistleblower complaint against Boeing, saying that his attempts to raise quality and safety problems had been ignored and that he was punished for continuing to flag them. Mm. Barnett filed a whistleblower complaint against Boeing in early 2017. His case against the company was heading toward a trial this June, his family said. Was. He was looking forward to having his day in court and hoped that it would force Boeing to change its culture, the family said in a statement shared with NPR by his brother Rodney. The family says Barnett's health declined because of the stresses of taking a stand against his longtime employer, not to mention the, you know, largest defense contractor, mm-hmm. you know, builder of bombs and, you know, all sorts of military aircraft.
Yeah. I just want to quickly mention that, like, if we had a free market, the company would be thanking him for doing this.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because, like, you're exposing a flaw in your system that could be exploited by your competition. But like you guys said, who's going to compete against Boeing?
Well, and
they can just make all the mistakes they want. And it's fine.
Certainly wouldn't have made news.
It's illegal to compete with Boeing.
Right.
But it certainly wouldn't have made news. Like, if a free market existed, and this guy was an employee of somebody manufacturing aircraft, and he was like, hey, guys, I got some concerns about the process, and, like, I think it's going to affect passenger safety or flight safety, period. Mm-hmm. Right? They'd have been, oh, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, let's address that and fix it.
Yeah.
And, like, life would have just went on.
Yeah, thank you for preventing a PR disaster
and
the complete destruction of our market share in this industry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're a lifesaver. Thank you. Here's a promotion.
Right, yeah.
And while we're on the topic of a free market and what it would look like, so if I was running a dispute resolution organization, a court system, and it turns out that during an important deposition, the guy disappears.
Default judgment.
Right. Default judgment becomes an option. Or here's one. Boeing is no longer allowed to be a part of my system.
Mm.
So it would actually motivate them to protect not to him. Do this.
Well, not to just not do this, but to actively protect him.
Right.
Right, the incentive structure would be corrected.
Right.
Which is something that can't happen under the, I don't know what's the right word, the tyranny of government as we know it today.
Right.
Right. Like, there's something to be said, like as an anarchist, right? People are like, oh, you don't think rules should... It's like, no. I don't think rulers... Right. And rules are fine. I have no problem with rules.
Not only that, it is precisely because I want the rules to apply to everyone.
Right.
I want them to apply to police. I want them to apply to politicians. I want them to apply to soldiers. I want them to apply to doctors.
Yep.
I want them to apply to Fauci.
Yep.
I want everyone to be governed by rules that actually happen.
Well, we're not even in a system of law and order. What we're in is a system of anarcho-tyranny.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, that's...
Yeah. The worst parts of anarchy in the sense of chaos and the worst parts of tyranny at the same time.
603-283-6160. What do you know about this whistleblower case against Boeing and Mr. Barnett? Give us a call. Let us know your opinion. More Free Talk Live is coming up. Hour number two is next.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. and I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.